हरिः ॐ सहना भवतु सहना भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवसरि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Page 21. The cowherd boys said, O earthly gods, please hear us. We cowherd boys are executing the orders of Krishna, but we have been sent here by Balaram. We wish all good for you. Please acknowledge our arrival. Footnote 9. Srila Sanatana Goswami points out that they mentioned Krishna first, though they had been instructed to mention Balaram first. By nature, they had special devotion to Krishna and identified themselves as his servants since he had given the order. So he had given the order, but what he was saying is that on the, you know, position of Balaram, right?
Is that something we should follow?
Yes.
I mean, if they're given the order, but they have a personal affection the other way.
Well, as long as it works, because Krishna is superior to Balaram, so that works out. So
yes.
It's just a matter of how one's connecting it. You know, right. It's just like whoever one is, you connect yourself through the spiritual master, then that works. No one can complain
right.
about that.
Right.
And if they do complain about that, you shouldn't be talking in front of them anyway.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Lord Rama and Lord Achyuta are tending their cows not far from here. They are hungry and want you to give them some of your food. Therefore, O Brahmanas, O best of the knowers of religion, if you have faith, please give some food to them. Footnote 10. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur assigns verse 7 to Bhagavad Akramichi Mala, chapter 19, entitled The Perfection of the Mellow of Pure Love, the Unlimited Dimensions of Rasa, Siddha Prema Rasa, Rasa Garima, which is in the Prayojana section of the Thakur's book. Right? So Krishna and Balaram are not hungry, but they act as if they are hungry to... for the pastime, for their own satisfaction, because then the interaction with the devotees, the Brahmins, the cowherd boys, all these different things are there. Srila Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur elaborates, seeing the Brahmins unfavorably inclined and not saying anything, they said, O Brahmanas, if you have faith in Krishna and Balaram, then give, and if you do not, then say no, and we will go back. You are knowers of the highest Dharma, so what can we say about Dharma and our Dharma to you? Because you remain silent on hearing that Krishna and Balaram are hungry and asking for food, when the whole universe melts with love on hearing their names, we can understand that you are twice born, dvija, meaning born from two parents. Clever. Calling them best of knowers of Dharma actually means they are completely ignorant of Dharma. Right? Because that's also very standard. It's considered a very cultured way to... point out a weakness in somebody is by glorifying them in that area of where their weakness is. Right.
Because at the same time you're limiting it to that. You're saying that's as far as it goes. Or
yeah, but also just that it's obvious that it's not.
Yeah.
You know, but here it's being used very nicely because they are in the proper know. In the material world and people use it, it's not so nice, but you know, it's the same technique. You know, it's more cultured technique. The cowherd boys continued, except during the interval between the initiation of the performer of a sacrifice, except during the interval between the initiation of the performer of a sacrifice and the actual sacrifice of the animal, O most pure Brahmanas, it is not contaminating for even the initiated to partake of food, at least in sacrifices other than sautramani. Jiva Goswami elaborates, The cowherd boys display their natural learning in this verse. The boys are familiar with various sacrifices, such as the animal sacrifice. They use the word he to indicate that the conclusion is definite, based on scriptural evidence. Eating is contaminated from the initiation until the animal sacrifice, but not otherwise. In the Sautaramani sacrifice, eating is forbidden, but not in other sacrifices. Knowing the proper and improper time, we ask you for food. Because in these rituals, there's all these technical things, because in here, that depending on the yagya, they go for a very long time. And some of them are not. So there's a specific time from the initiation, then they take that formal focus. Like that's until that aspect of the completion. But anything before that, anything after that is not banned. Like that. And that specifically... Okay, but in the Sautaramani, then it appears that it's at any time is not allowed. Because it must be a shorter one or something that requires more focus because there's some greater benefit you'll get from it.
They're talking about taking food, but the boys, they didn't want Brahmins to eat. They wanted to eat themselves.
Yes, but still that you would deal with it and everything like that. So they're just pointing out that it's not a problem. You know, in other words, food can be distributed. At that time, then everybody focuses, so you don't. You know, it's just like, just as a common example, the wedding is going on, and everybody is just sitting and talking prajalpa with all the other relatives and friends like that. But then when it comes to the point of the Sindur Dhanam, you know, or the Mangala Sutra, or, you know, all that kind of thing, covering the head that signifies that aspect, that at that point everyone stops talking and watches. You know? So it's like that. It's just there are times when, you know, it doesn't matter, but these times then that's the main thing. No? Yes. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, although the boys were village boys and were not expected to be learned in all the Vedic principles of religious ritual, they hinted that because of their association with Krishna and Balaram, they knew all those principles. Because Krishna is religion, we have to remember that. So if you know Krishna, you know all religion. So it'll come up in the pastimes, it'll come up in the discussions. It's just part of the fun. Like that. And they'll hear about it, you know, in the stories, because in the stories there'll be some Brahmin doing something or some king doing something. And so like that, then they hear about so much. And they have a tendency not to forget, like us, right? Because here in the material world, forgetting is standard. Because if you don't forget from one lifetime to the next, it's a real problem, right? So just forgetting is standard. But in the spiritual world, then they don't. You know, only forgetting might be temporary in some manifestation of some certain ecstatic emotions. Right? Sometimes just in the happiness of being together, a separation, or like this, then one might forget. But otherwise, then they remember.
For
so,
For Leela?
No. It's just a matter of it's the ecstatic emotions that come up in the time. But then after that, then they'll remember. It's just they become overwhelmed by those.
But I mean that they forget that Krishna's God.
That's another thing, but that's yoga maya. It's not that they think, oh, I should forget Krishna's God. No, just yoga maya, because of their love, then that's not an important thing. That's another thing, but I'm just talking about the point is let's say unlimited time ago they heard a story about a king performing this and then some detail was there about food and these things. Even though it was unlimited life, you know, unlimited time ago in eternity, they still will remember it because it's valuable in the pastime. You know, it's just like the gopis. They know so many technical things because they hear the stories, they hear all the different things people talk, right? And so they will remember. Well, we you know, if we hear it a million times, then it might stick. You know, maybe.
It might.
Yeah. We're not guaranteeing. Yeah. I mean, so you can get, you know, how you say, warranty on so many things, but memory isn't one. So it's like, yeah. By addressing the Brahmanas as knowers of all religious principles, the boys expressed the point of view that when the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna and Balaram, were asking for food, the Brahmanas should immediately deliver some without hesitation, because as stated in the Bhagavad Gita, one should perform yajna, sacrifices, only for the satisfaction of Vishnu. So it's not that they don't know these things, but here, these technical points are being used just as part of the pastime. Right? So it's not that they're worried that he's God. It's just that, no, you know, you're doing sacrifice to please God. Here's God, so give him something. You know? Like that. But he's just their friend. Does that make sense? You know, it'd be just like you have some good friends. You know, really close friends. They went to screw up together, went to school together, then after they graduate, they go in all their different directions. And they're all nicely situated, and one of them becomes very, very prominent, or very famous. So then let's say that they're having a weekend where they're all getting together, right? So they go to wherever they used to always go and this and that. And so when they come in, when they come up to the receptionist or whoever's, you know, running the place, then, you know, for fun, but it's real, but it's for fun that they'll mention, oh, he's that, you know who he is, you know, so you should give some nice facility, you know, don't cheat on this, you know. You understand? It's just fun. But at the same time, it's real because they are. You know, so they should in that, but at the same time as they're taking part of the fun because we're their friends. Because if he's God, they're God's friends. It doesn't change that he's God, so they're not friends anymore. It's just however high he is, he's the friends of that. You know, does that make sense? Yeah. So it doesn't disturb their relationship. Sukadeva Goswami continued, the Brahmanas heard this supplication from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, yet they refused to pay heed. Indeed, they were full of petty desires and entangled in elaborate rituals. Though presuming themselves advanced in Vedic learning, they were actually inexperienced fools. Footnote 11. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura assigns verse 9 to Bhaga Arkarmichi Mala, chapter 19, entitled The Perfection of the Mellow of Pure Love, the Unlimited Dimensions of Rasa, Siddha Prema Rasa, Rasa Garima, which is in the Prayojana section of the Thakura's book. Right? So the cowherd boys, that they could see like this, and it was just an aspect of their love for Krishna, right? And how Krishna would take part in this. But unfortunately, they were not qualified. Right? So inexperienced fools. Right? Now, as far as ritual goes, as knowledge and skill goes, on that platform, you would say that they're very experienced. Right, but the whole point is, since human life is meant for knowing God and going back to Godhead, then is that very important? Does that make sense? Like, let's say, the person is in, I say, they're sitting in the class for the math test, right? They actually don't know anything about math. But in writing their, you know, whatever it is they're supposed to write, they do it in really, really nice English, fabulous, you know, grammar, poetics, you know, all these different things like that, that if it was an English paper, they'd do really well. But it's not. It's a math class. You understand? So you can say, yes, and the other, they're good. Because we'll take, oh, any knowledge and skill there. But the point is it's actually for understanding God. That's what human life is for. That's why you can take somebody who is very qualified materially, and if they don't know anything spiritually, they are a fool. It's not actually a problem. That's why the Brahmins are the highest. But of Brahmins, the Vaishnavas are actually the purpose. So that knowledge and skills where they're situated, that's the natural platform to be situated on. But it's what you do with it that's actually important. So in other words, Brahmins are respected because of the platform they're on. The Vaishnavas are respected because they know what that platform is for.
See, the cowherd boys, they're higher here, but they're not Brahmins just because of that. sometimes we see devotees thinking, you know, Vaishnavas higher, that means we're automatically Brahmanas.
Automatically Brahmanas in that they know, because you can see, they have knowledge, they know, they understand Brahman. So that's the point, is there. And they understand these other technical points. But the thing is yes, we are Brahman by realization, but it doesn't necessarily mean we're Brahman by not by the technical occupational knowledge and skill of a Brahman. So we should be careful there. So someone who is, that has to be respected. Like I think it was some devotee, Prabhupada said something about the Brahmins, you know, the caste Brahmins like this, or the you know, the Smartas, and some devotee commented, oh, they're not Brahmins, you know, because they're not Vaishnavas. And then Prabhupada corrected him, so no, they are Brahmins. So they have to be respected. Or just like in Kumbh Mela, I think it was some Mayavadi sannyasi had come to visit Prabhupada or something, and then the others, they didn't respect him. Prabhupada said, he's a sannyasi, you have to bow down. He says, but he's a Mayavadi. Yeah, he's a Mayavadi, but he's a sannyasi. You're respecting the sannyas order. We don't necessarily listen to what he has to say. That's another thing. But you have to respect these positions. So these, even though we say, "Oh, we're devotees," it doesn't matter. It actually does. It's the culture. Does that make sense? So, if you have, let's say, someone doing a dance for the festival and somebody doing a yajna for the festival, it's not that they're both part of the festival. They're both preaching, but there's a difference in how you're going to deal with dancers and with the Brahmins. If you just make it all equal, then how is that actually discrimination?
So real Vaishnavas would respect these different...
Yes, they would respect all the Varnashram positions, you know, according to the rules. But the purpose of that is pleasing Krishna. And so the actual conclusion, that's the reason they do it, because that's what Krishna does. Krishna respects everybody according to their position in Varnashram. He doesn't neglect anyone. So then if we are more Paramahamsa than Krishna, so how does that work? You know? So, but the thing is, are we coming from a background where we know all that? Are we from a proper aristocratic background that is trained and cultured and all that? And then we're giving all that up? Or are we from a background of, you know, just let's say, for example, Malechas or Yavanas? We're just using that because there's actually 12 tribes, you know, so we could be, you know, like this. So, so not to get specific. So then, and so we couldn't follow those anyway. We don't have an interest to follow anyway. And then we're using, oh, we just chant as an excuse. So we have to be very careful then, because it's the fun point is, many times those that complain about hard preaching are the ones that don't care about actually respect according to Varnashram.
Yes.
So, where is the consistency? You know, if we just chant, then, you know, we don't worry about anything, right? That means their respect, their everything like this. So you have the problem is that they're not, there's no respect for anybody except for who they respect. So it's not based on authority, it's based on their own mind. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So.
Maharaj?
Yeah.
Can you please explain why this particular verse is in the Prayojan and not Sambandha section?
A Prayojan, because it's the taste of this whole, how it's going on, that the Krishna, who asked that this happen this way? Who set the pastime up in this way?
Who sets up the pastime in this way? You're saying, you asked that, I didn't hear. Let's
see. Okay.
Sorry.
Who arranged that the cowherd boys would go talk to the Brahmins and ask in this way? Means in this, how you say, stick to the Abhida rather than the Lakshana. Right? So, did Krishna tell the cowherd boys to first go to the Brahmins and to explain that Krishna and Balaram are sending them?
Yes.
So they specifically did that. So would that not be to please Krishna?
Yes.
Then?
Yeah.
So we say it's from the point of view of the cowherd boys, not the Brahmins.
Yeah.
The Brahmins have a Sambandha issue.
They don't even fit within the whole thing. They just fit within, controlled by Maya. It's the, you know, one of the unlimited aspects of Maya's control, but we don't need to get into that. Does that make sense? Because otherwise, it's here, we're bringing out major points. So then when you're dealing with the materialist, you only have to deal with major points. So therefore, the Bhagavatam in that one verse, what is that, you know, Grihasutapta, you know, like this, means attachment to the place of your birth, your family, your community, your family, your children, your wealth, your body, like that. It kind of covers everything. So everything, you don't have to keep going, oh, here's another verse of the unlimited dimensions of illusion, you know, like that. So you don't have to do that because there's no taste there. It's the same, you know. Any side of the old shoe that you chew on will still be old.
Right? And you've chewed it many times.
Yes. So, yeah, even if you take it and turn it upside down and chew on
it'll
it,
still
it's
be
still.
Months,
yeah. Yeah, like that. It's just, yeah, you just get a little bit more of the flavor of the leather rather than the rubber. If you turn it back the other way, you get the rubber, not the leather. So. Yes? So that means then the real thing is knowledge about Krishna. So if we place material knowledge above knowledge about Krishna. So sometimes it's said, okay, Prabhupada says everything's in his books, higher studies are done from his books. Some object that no, there's so many things that are not in the books. That is a statement of an inexperienced fool. That's simple. Because here you're taking highly qualified Brahmins who are very good at the technical details. But it's also, they're full of petty desires. Right? Because that's the whole thing. All the little details take care of all the little petty desires. Right? Does that make sense? You just want a house, that's generic. If you want a big house, that's more specific. If you want a big house that's, you know, really nicely made, that's more specific. You want a big house that's nicely made with lots of nice furniture, then you understand? So the more petty is your desire, the more detailed is the yajna. Does that make sense? They match. So you can say, oh, he's more technical here. Yes, that makes him more petty. Right? Is a nerd really technically detailed? And then what are their own personal desires? Quite petty. Right? They want this computer with this kind of thing in it because then they can play that video game. You understand? So that's the whole point, is it gets down to small little things. Now, when it comes to details for Krishna, yes, we want those fine details for Krishna. Right? Because for ourselves it's very specific, but for Krishna it's very broad and generic.
We just
Yeah, so but it has to be as how detailed we are of our own needs, that at least to that detail we should be trying to fulfill Krishna's needs. Yes.
I guess the confusion happens between the balance of the Tathasta Lakshana and then Swarup Lakshana.
Yes.
Because in the beginning it was all about, you know, Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu Smarana.
Right.
And, you know, the Tathasta Lakshana people or devotees, let's say, they wouldn't really care about that, developing those qualities.
No.
But then nowadays, you know, it shifted completely to the Tathasta and then Swarup.
But without the Swarup.
Exactly.
Because the Tathasta without the Swarup, then you'll find those in pious people.
Yeah.
You know, Kalidas was very poetic. You know, he's famous as one of the best poets in India. But he's not famous in any way as a devotee. Nothing. I mean, zero. I think he was a Kali Bhakta. You know? So it didn't, you know, and it didn't work out so good for him. His story is quite sad. And he was so knowledgeable. Like that.
And wonderful.
Yeah. Okay. Certain things just don't change.
Should they?
No. Okay. So Kalidas was... He was, I think, a goat herd. Right? I mean, and of goat herds, you know, so goat herds aren't famous for being brilliant. You know, but they can be clever. You know, practical clever. But he is a goat. He was an idiot. I mean, a total idiot. So I'm not sure, because sometimes the details of him and...
Gopal Bhand.
Gopal Bhand. Tenaliram. They get mixed up, because all these stories are all so similar that the borders overlap a bit. But stuff like... So that's him. He's an idiot, right? He's the kind of guy, he sits on the branch and then saws on the inside, so then he falls off. He's the kind of guy, because, you know, the goat, they carry sticks, you know, to walk and herd and stuff, you know, and if anything comes along, you know, foxes or that, they can chase them away. And you put them on their shoulders and hang their arms on them, you know, and like that he tries to walk into the house, but he can't get through the door, and then he's chastising the house, and he's, you know, this is his house, why he's not being let in, and stuff like that. Okay, we understand the kind of idiot we're dealing with here? Okay, so that's one scene. Now let's shift to the other side. There was a king, and his daughter was super, super intelligent and learned. You know, she knew all the scriptures and this and that, but a bit proud, right? And so then there was a, the qualification to marry her was whoever could defeat her in an argument. Right? Because she was so smart, she wanted somebody smarter, right? Which is natural. But just because they would come and she could defeat them, but she wouldn't deal in a gracious way, she'd insult them also. So because of this, then at one point all the Brahmins, because, you know, when the Brahmins get en masse of all these insulted Brahmins, they get upset, so they think, how are we going to do it? Because they are Brahmins, so they're smart. So they think, okay, she wants to marry the smartest, and she's insulting everybody, so we have to come up with a plan how we can marry her to the most stupid person there is. So then they go out searching, and then someone observes Kalidas and his exploits, and they think, he is the man, right? So they bring him, they dress him up as a big pundit. They all come as assistant pundits, carrying the books and doing the service and all that. They come up and they tell her that this pundit is so smart that he won't even talk for this argument. It'll only be by sign language. So she thinks, wow, okay, you know, that you could express everything through that. So she accepts the challenge. So then, you know, because he's great, she should start. So she starts, you know, and then she pulls up one finger. And then he holds up two. And then I forget what she does. She does something, you know. Oh, I think she holds up five. And then he makes a fist. And then she just goes, you know, she's defeated. She accepts defeat, you know. And then your marriage is arranged and everything like that, and all in this and that. So then on the, you know, that first evening they're together, and she's there. She's just so happy she's found the smartest Brahmin, and, you know, like this and that. And then I think he falls asleep and he starts talking about his goats and this and that and stuff. And then she figures out that she was cheated, because all the Brahmins that she insulted all came with him. So then she puts two and two together, right? So she asked him, you know, what happened here? He says, you know, I have a one finger, you know, and I meant, you know, she, you know, gives some philosophical point. You know, I thought, I'll poke you in the nose. And says, he's two finger, I'll poke you in the eyes, you know. And then she put a five finger. So I give a slap, I'll give you a punch, you know. So that's, and then she understood she's been tricked. And I'm not exactly sure the detail on how he ended up getting the mantras for worshiping Kali. But he got mantras, and in that, and this also gets mixed up with Tenali Ram and all that. But in any case, by chanting these mantras, he actually became the smartest pundit. But material, he's not a devotee. And so he's super smart, so he ends up as being an, you know, as an assistant for the king. I mean, his you know, who he would sit and discuss and everything, and all the different, you know, after the day's work and that, he would sit, discuss philosophy, culture, you know, scriptural elements like that. So he's really, really smart, but poetic. You know, one of his famous ones is the king wanted to get into a very deep philosophical point. Unless this is... I think this is a Kalidas. Then he said, you know, where is real knowledge learned? And then Kalidas thought for a moment, right, Kalidas? Yeah. So then he thought for a moment, and then he said, between the two breasts. And the king got angry. He says, you know, we're having philosophical discussion. We're not discussing Sringar here. You know, so this is not that kind of discussion. So why are you saying that? So he just threw him out. Get out of here. So, like that. And then the next day, you know, they came back to the court, and the king is still really upset. You know, how could you do, you know, how could you, you know, we're having a particular discussion. You always catch the mood. We always talk. And how did you shift things? Then Kalidas said, but did you ask me to explain? You know, you just got angry and threw me out, you know. And as a Brahmin, then he just left. He didn't try to. And then he said, so the king, okay, then explain. It better be good. Otherwise, you know, you don't please the king. There can be some serious problems. So he said, child is born, and then he goes to the, you know, then he's with his mother and all that. She takes care and all that, and he's attached to his mother. Then he goes to the Gurukul. And at the Gurukul, then he's under the teacher and everything like that, and then he's studying, he's learning and everything like that. And then, after studying and that, he graduates, and then he gets married, and he gets attached to his wife. So therefore, knowledge, actual knowledge is learned between the two breasts. So you can see, he's smart, he's clever, and poetic. So that's why Kalidas is famous. So then... the king said something about, he was glorifying the king one day, or, you know, glorifying something like that. And then he thought, you know, I'm not sure, like, you know, about, you know, he's glorifying me, what about, you know, the beauty of his wife, because his wife is so beautiful, and that maybe he could glorify according to Shastra and all that, you know, and all the poetics and all that. So he says, I'll bring the queen. And Kali says, you don't even have to bring the queen, just bring one hair of the queen. Because there's a shastra on how to read hairs, you know, like you can read moles, you can read, you know, lines on the palm, on the head, you know, it's in the physiognomy, I think it's called, Samudrika. It's a whole sign that any part of the body, anything, you can read and tell everything about the person. So he was knowledgeable and he's proud, right? So he says, no, just bring one hair. And so the king is thinking, oh, okay, yeah, cool. So he gets one hair, brings it, and he's looking at it, you know, because it has different, how it's, fat, thin colors, this and that. There's some science to it. So as he's reading, he's going down, and from that he can tell all these other things. Because also in the science of moles, you'll have one on the face, you'll have one on the torso, you'll have one on the leg. They always come together. And so depending on where the one is, you know where the other two are. It's just they all go together. They're a group. So you know, those in astrology or these other things, they'll use them to gain faith in people, because you can see on their face they got a mole in a certain place, and says, oh, you have a mole, let's say, on the right side of your navel. And they go, oh, how did you know? So then they know, okay, he knows. And then therefore, when he tells them, take this medicine, follow this diet, you'll do it. Otherwise, it's, well, that's his opinion, you know. Does that make sense? So he was telling all these things about the queen and where she had moles and this and that and her beauty. He went through the whole thing. And then when he mentioned that, because that's something you can't see, the king got angry. He says, how do you know that? He says, because the hair here says. And he says, I don't believe in that. He says, you know, so therefore he accused that you've spent time with the queen. Like that. And so then he had to leave. Right? And that the king was just so jealous and just so angry, it never went away. And so then, you know, when he could see it's not, then he left the kingdom, went far away in India. And then at one point the king, you know, meditating on this, becomes so envious that he tries to find him to kill him. So then he's, you know, some way away. And that, and then the king sends out, because he can't find him, he sends out half of a poem. Right, the first two lines. And then they read it out, you know, in all the public places and, you know, all over India, they just go. That anybody who can finish these two lines, you know, then they'll be given, you know, vast amounts of wealth and this and that. And I think Kalidas at that time was living with some prostitute and all. And they came and she was in the market and heard it. And then she came back and told him, hey, we can get so much money by this. You're a poet. You can do this. And he knew what it was. He says, no, but if I answer this, you know, this will be my death. Like that. She says, no, but think the gold and that. What are you talking about, death and all? Because she didn't know what it was. Because he knew only the king could write such poetry. And the king knows that only Kalidas can answer it. So then he gave her the things like that. And then they went back and then they found it. And then the king, you know, came. And that was the end of Kalidas. So you can see, it's not as nice as stories as the Puranic ones. Yes.
Some line from his Raghuvamsha is quoted in the Madhyalila.
In the?
Madhyalila.
Madhyalila. Yeah, no, he's a very famous poet. So many things he would get right on the technical points. So if those technical points are useful, in, like Bharat Maharaj, but not Bharat Maharaj, Bharat Muni's, the Natya Shastra. So that's quoted so much in Nectar Devotion, Ujjwala Nilamani, all these things. Because it's just, there's a science of how the emotions and everything work. Like that. So he was good at that. So poetics means aesthetics. So he would know all those kinds of things.
That's, when you start Sanskrit study, you know the basics.
When you start with?
Sanskrit study.
Okay.
So we have everything of Kalidas, you know, that we study.
Yes. Okay. You had something?
No, my name is.
After the story of Kalidas, and everything else pales. And
anyway, it was about the Brahmanas and the Vaishnavas. I had conversations with the devotee, and I had really hard time convincing him that although they are not Vaishnavas, they are Brahmanas. And we should
respect yes.
them. So I was just wondering from where this misunderstanding comes.
Misunderstanding comes is that we don't understand that two things are going on. We identify as the body, so we think the two go together. So the point is the soul and the body are separate, so the qualification of the gross and subtle body can be very great, but the qualification of the soul can be not very great. You know, and for those who don't understand this, it generally is the other way around. The qualification of the soul is great, but the qualification of the conditioned nature is not. So because we identify too closely, we think that I'm doing this, that's why it's devotional service. Like that. But at the same time, it's not a bad thing in that it keeps them away from all kinds of association. Because otherwise, when people do see that, oh, they are respected, then much of the time, then they tend to then go spend time with them. So better they don't, you know. But at the same time, is they have that develop that critical mood and don't develop the Brahminical lifestyle, then there's a bit of a problem. But the point is these things can be gained from there. Like, you know, like Jayapataka Maharaj and Achyutananda Maharaj, and they stayed when there was no temple in India, they were the first two that came and stayed. They stayed in the Gaudiya Math, in Madhur Maharaj's Math, just the one, two down. Then, and so then they learned all the, you know, how to play mridanga, you know, all the different things, how to dress, how to deal, that's Bengali, all the culture, that's the Gaudiya culture. But, you know, they saw in connection with what Prabhupada's giving. So the funny part is even though they stayed at the Gaudiya Math, of any two people in the movement, they were the most strong on having nothing to do with the Gaudiya Math. Like that. They are very, very careful and know exactly where the line is. You know, because Prabhupada explained. Like that. Well, others who don't know, then they get too close and things like that. But those two are the strongest on not being involved, but they're also the strongest on the traditional culture. Like that. So that's like there. And I think it was Jamuna Devi and Mataji, that when they were traveling, I think it's 71, and staying in all these high-class people's houses, that they were supposed to go and learn from the ladies about, you know, what's the traditional practices and dealings of ladies and all that. And so I think Jamuna picked up some cooking, but they didn't seem to pick up lifestyle. But cooking they seem to have caught. At least she did. The lifestyle aspects they didn't seem to have put much emphasis on, or they didn't discuss it. But so that was the whole idea. Is probably wanted to catch from these people where you can, those who could. You know, but it wasn't for everybody. Like if anybody else went over the Gaudiya Math, probably get very annoyed. But so like that, then you had to be careful. So it does have its advantages, because some then they see as, oh, they're proper Brahmins, and they do their stuff more than they do our stuff, and it's hard, they can't tell the difference. Or they get involved with the Babaji's at Radhakund, or, you know, different, they're just like this, they just get out of whack. So for the neophyte, it keeps them from getting distracted. But if for a Madhyama, it's not very useful. Okay, Srila Vishnath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. Though the Brahmins were knowledgeable of scripture, why did they not respect Krishna and Balaram? This verse answers. They actually did not know scripture. Rather, they were ignorant in learning and imparting scripture. And therefore, they were criticized by Srila Sukadeva Goswami with anger for 2.5 verses. So we could also take it here. Sukadeva Goswami's tasting of rasa, right? You know, and his love for Krishna. Now he's angry that why these Brahmins aren't catching it. So it's not about that, you know, we're better than that. It's about that their mood was wrong. Having only aspirations for insignificant heavenly planets, they thought themselves learned. All right, and this, the insignificant petty desire, is heavenly planets. So coming down here, then how petty is that? And then if we go below, you know, what we'd call fancy petty here, down to, you know, just off the street petty. Having only aspirations for insignificant heavenly planets, they thought themselves learned, vridha. But actually, they were only old, another meaning of vridha, right? Because to be so knowledgeable, then they had to have been studying for a long time, right? Sukadeva Goswami continued.
That's usually a quality ascribed to Shudras, like age. Is there any
comparison? That, but they're not talking about because they're age. They're talking about their knowledge. They're just cleverly on the words, just saying that they're not. They're actually just old, not learned.
So
They may know scriptures, but you can sit there and depending upon the parrot, you can teach so many things to the parrot. You know, that was one of the things, I think it was Krishna Devarai. Then he had a whole huge, like, what do you call it? Is it called a menagerie? Menagerie?
Yeah.
Where you keep all the birds and all
right.
that. Big one. Yeah. So he had one of those full of parrots, and each one was trained in chanting a different name of Vishnu. Right? You know, so then you'd have this crates full of parrots just chanting the Lord's names. Right? Yeah. So, but they're parrots.
Not self-realized.
Yeah, no. I mean, they'll definitely get benefit from chanting the holy name like that, but it'll be a gyata sukriti, you know. But it'll, you know, something in the future. Sukadeva Goswami continued. Although the ingredients of sacrificial performance, the place, time, particular paraphernalia, mantras, rituals, priests, fires, demigods, performer, offering, and the as yet unseen beneficial results are all simply aspects of his opulences, means Krishna. Like Krishna in Gita says, he is all these things, because it's his potencies that make them work. Right? That's how the devotee in the performance of their duties can see Krishna in everything. Because why does pushing the keys on your computer, do you get an effect? Because that potency is Krishna. Right? And if, let's say, the butterfly keys work better than the seesaw keys, that's because it's Krishna's potency. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point. It's Krishna. That's why it works better. But he's pointing out they're foolish because they don't know this. They should know this. Why they don't know this? They're so studied, they consider themselves learned. It means you have to know this. You don't know this means then there's something wrong. The Brahmins saw Lord Krishna as an ordinary human because of their perverted intelligence. They failed to recognize that he is the supreme absolute truth. the directly manifested personality of Godhead, whom the material senses cannot ordinarily perceive. But because generally we think of God, because he's the greatest, then he would naturally be doing the greatest things in the way of what we value, in the way of opulence and facilities and all that. I have a big house, God's bigger. I'm opulent, he's more opulent. I'm beautiful, he's more beautiful. I have associates, he has more. Right? Does that make sense? You know, I got a, you know, cool, what do you call it? You know, Learjet to fly around and all that. He flies around a Garuda. Can't get more cool than that. Right? And he flies at the speed of mine, so way faster than my jet. Right? So, yeah, and I can land anywhere. Right? You don't have to worry about an airport, right? So, because otherwise you have to go to the airport, then you have to get a car, then you have to go in. And no, he doesn't do that. So we expect that. So here, but that's important to someone where it is a struggle to get those and maintain those. But since Krishna is the source of opulence, having opulence is him. It's not that it's something he obtains. Therefore, just doing ordinary things, seemingly ordinary things, that's more fun. Right? Because the opulences are just him. So that's why then Krishna and Balaram and Braja, this is the highest manifestation of the personality of Godhead. Right? Because here they just perform seemingly human pastimes, just ordinary pastimes. So the foolish, then they take him as ordinary. As we see, these Brahmins did, Indra did, you know, so the Brahma did, you know, so it happens. And these are the smartest people. Right? With that. What did he call him before? Bhumi Deva, or yeah, like that. It means the gods of the earth. Right, so you have got the gods of the earth, you have the king of the heavenly planets, you have the Brahma, the head of the universe, and so, you know, one should catch that there's a pattern here. Right. Yeah. Thus, bewildered by their false identification with the mortal body, they did not show him proper respect. When the Brahmins failed to reply, even with a simple yes or no, O chastiser of the enemy, Parikith, the coward boys returned disappointed to Krishna and Rama and reported this to them. Footnote 12, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur assigns verse 12 to Bhagavad Arkamrita Chimala, chapter 19, entitled The Perfection of the Mellow of Pure Love. The unlimited dimensions of rasa, siddha prema rasa, rasa garima, which is in the Prayojana section of the Thakur's book. So they were caring about Krishna being hungry. They wanted to get something for Krishna, and they made their effort. It's not working, so they're feeling disappointed. That disappointment is just a transformation of the aspects of the unlimited dimensions of rasa, right? So it's an aspect of anubhava. Okay? Srila Sanatana Goswami points out that Sukadeva Goswami addresses Maharaj Parikit as chastiser of the enemy, because Sukadeva Goswami saw that the king was disturbed that the so-called Brahmins were neglecting to feed Krishna's associates. In this way, it is hinted that if Maharaj Parikit were there to witness such an event, he surely would have chastised the Brahmins for their offense. Right? Yeah, so the king's business is to see that everybody else does their job. That's his job. It doesn't make him superior to the Brahmins. It just means it's his job to see that they're acting within their capacity. And if they are, then there's nothing to say. Right? But if there's not, then he can bring that in point. But it's their business to correct themselves. The king doesn't correct. If they can't correct themselves or won't correct themselves, then the king can have them banished from his kingdom. But banishment means they take everything with them. You know, the king doesn't maintain anything like that. Does that make sense? He won't take their property, he won't this and that. But they have to leave. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, although the companions of Lord Krishna and Balaram were simple cowherd boys, they were in a position to dictate even to the high-class Brahmins engaged in the Vedic rituals of sacrifice. Why? Because they are Vaishnavas. But the smarter Brahmanas, who were simply sacrificial-minded, could not understand the dictation of the transcendental devotees of the Lord. But, right? So now, in here, one may say, see, we're devotees. So according to, well, you asked before, the one about that, is that one may say is, okay, but we don't care for all those ritualistic aspects, so therefore the temple manager can then be telling them what to do and how to do the ritual and this and that, even though what he's telling them may be incorrect. Because you say, we're devotees, we don't care for that. Yes, as devotees, if you're senior in your devotional attitude and understanding, then you can correct someone in a junior position, yes, and guide them to have the right consciousness. Right? So in that way, you can say, it is correct. But then, how are they correcting them? Then they're going to correct their brahminical position by an administrative one when they don't even understand the brahminical? That's where it falls apart. So yes, if in performing their rituals they're getting too ritualistic and you bring out, no, we're devotees, we care more about the devotion to Krishna, not about the ritual. So therefore the ritual should not get in the way of pleasing Krishna and pleasing the Vaishnavas. So if you get into your boring, mumbling your mantras and kind of going through all these slow, boring things while you keep looking at the book because you actually don't know what you're doing, and that and the devotees are thinking, why are we doing this? Why aren't we chanting? Then yes, then that's a mistake. Right? But if all that can be done nicely and pleasing to the devotees and all that enhances the atmosphere, then what's the problem? Right? So one has to see is the consciousness, yes, that may need correction if one gets too distracted by the rules. And so therefore the Brahmins can get distracted, but that doesn't mean that you correct this distraction with somebody who's distracted by management. Does that make sense? So you have to see what's being done here. If it's correcting the consciousness, yes, anybody who's a Vaishnava can correct that. Right, so it doesn't matter what the position in the Varnashram, but when you're dealing Varnashram, there is a hierarchy there. Because otherwise, if you're doing that, they can correct there, then the guy who's running the book table, he can correct the temple president. Right? And then the guy who's setting up and cleaning the book table and all that, he can correct the book distributor. Right? It just keeps going, down the line.
But even if the correction is being given, like in this particular case, you have the cowherd boys giving the correction to the Brahmanas. Now the cowherd boys are younger, whereas the Brahmanas are elderly in age.
Yeah, but who's age for?
Huh?
And who is simply age a consideration? You understand? It's just like this. You have the one child, like Shankaracharya. At 6, he was a sannyasi. So would we take him as a leader of society or not?
Yes,
but he's 6.
But he's
6. And all these guys are older, they have children, some are grandparents. Madhvacharya, he's 12. You understand? Age only. Now let's say someone is a carpenter. Okay? Now, he's been doing carpentry. One guy's been doing carpentry for 5 years, and one guy's been doing carpentry for 50 years. Who's better? So age does matter in the Shudra community. When it comes to skill, then time does make the difference. You know what I'm saying? It's just like the younger dancers are out there, and they're, they really have to move it to impress you, right? And Amita Bachchan just moves his hand, and you get the same effect. Right? Because why? He's a Shudra who's been doing that for the last 50 years. That's the whole point, is that in art, the longer you've been doing it, then that's respected. But when it comes to knowledge, someone can just learn something and have more of an understanding than someone who has more. So they may technically know, but he has more realization. So, you know more technical knowledge, of course that's more, that takes more time, but somebody has a better memory. Let's say you have somebody who has, they're Shrutidhar, they hear once, they know everything. So then they hear the thing once, they know more than it, but who else, they read the whole book, they'd have to read it 30 times. Like one academic was telling me, if they're going to have a discussion on a particular book, the standard thing, they read it 25, 30 times before the discussion so that they feel that they know the thing and can discuss. Mm-hmm. But a Shrutidhar hears it once. So that means he could have studied 30 books in the time they did, mm-hmm. than they did one. Mm-hmm. So then who knows more? Right? Then you have the realization of it, mm-hmm. which is higher. Right? Mm-hmm. So that wisdom, but then the ultimate wisdom is Krishna consciousness. Mm-hmm. So in that way it goes up. Mm-hmm. So age is respected. Did they not call them, you know, gods of the earth? Did they not call them all knowledgeable and respectable Brahmins? Did they in any way disrespect them? No. If anything that is, it is subtle. And the Brahmins didn't catch it because they didn't say anything. Right? You know, I mean, everybody's making some comments. Sukadeva Goswami, Sanatana, they're all making a comment. Yeah, that's so that we understand the difference. Then we'll see the next stage, because this is not what the main story is about. This is the preliminary, right? To do the puja, you have to set up, right? So now we're just setting up the pastime. Yeah? So now then we'll hear about the actual important part. Although the companions of Lord Krishna and Balaram were simple cowherd boys, they were in a position to dictate even to the high-class brahmanas engaged in the Vedic rituals of sacrifice. But the smarter brahmins, who were simply sacrificial-minded, could not understand the dictation of the transcendental devotees of the Lord. They could not even appreciate the begging of the Supreme Lord Krishna and Balaram. Although they heard all the arguments on behalf of Krishna and Balaram, they did not care for them, and they refused to speak to the boys, right? Because they don't even want to address it, because it's just like, for them, it's just so unnecessary that why would you even get involved? You know, if it was another Brahmin had come and was talking, so, okay, then you give an answer. But here it's just cowherd boys, not even cowherd men, just boys. Right? And these are small boys. Right? Like that. Despite being highly elevated in the knowledge of Vedic sacrificial rites, all such non-devotee brahmanas, although they think of themselves as very highly elevated, are ignorant, foolish people. But that doesn't mean we deal with them as fools. The cowherd boys didn't. But we're just saying, what is knowledge, what is foolishness? Because if we understand like that, then we know what is intelligence, what's not. What's foolishness and what's not. Right? What's piety and what's not. That's how we're supposed to see. Right? Yeah. Because if we're humble, they're going to be above us anyway. So if we use it, oh, see, they're foolish and so we're superior, then is that humility? No. Despite being highly elevated, although they think of themselves as very highly elevated, are ignorant, foolish persons. All their activities are childish because they do not know the purpose of the Vedas, as it is explained in the Bhagavad Gita, to understand Krishna, right? Because what makes the difference, you would say, between a child and an adult? In this kind of context. Because it's not knowledge, because we've already pointed out they're very intelligent. So what makes them childish? The hint's already been given before.
It's not the conclusion. The conclusion is not known.
The conclusion's not known, but so therefore, what is their interest?
Selfish.
Selfish, right? So children are known as more selfish, and then adults are supposed to be known as, at least they're better at hiding their selfishness. Right? Like that. So that's the whole thing. It's still about themselves. It's not about Krishna. So as adults, yes, they will be less selfish than as materialist, seemingly, at least culturally, than the children. But we can see that they're still interested in the heavenly pleasures. That's all. So it's just the kids, they're happy with more simple things and they want more sophisticated stuff. But that doesn't make it any difference. This in principle the same. Well, the cowherd boys, they're only interested in what's connected to Krishna, which is the conclusion of the Vedas. So the cowherd boys are therefore in a more elevated position than the Brahmins. Right? But culturally, they're going to deal as Vaishyas and the Brahmin as Brahmins. That's the point, is that the self-realization and the culture, they support each other, but they don't have to be functioning at the same position. Right? And that as one's cultured by devotional service, that doesn't mean it changes your social position. Right? That's just more of an opportunity to just serve Krishna. So that's the thing. It doesn't adjust. We want it to adjust because of what? Prestige.
Because we're not Krishna conscious.
Yeah, because we're not Krishna conscious. But the point is it doesn't matter. Like Kola Becha Sridhar is not complaining to Lord Chaitanya that, you know, I'm one of your eternal associates, why I have to be the Shudra and everybody else is that, you know, so like that, you know. So does that ever come up?
No.
No, you know, then Mukunda Dutta, you know, hey, how come I'm a Vaishya here, you know? Or Maharaj Prataparudra, you know, hey, I'm stuck being a king here. You understand? No, it's not. They just play the different roles. Because it's all just to please Krishna. Does that make sense? Yes.
Isn't it also like when you act according to this is the best preaching tool? Like
yes.
You keep yourself in the right position. And
yes. It works nicely because people, it means at least you know, what we would call in the material platform, intelligent people who understand culture, just, you know, whatever you could call modern culture, as much as that, they can appreciate if you're acting in a cultured way. They can't tell that it's spiritual culture, but they do appreciate the culture. They do appreciate the logic and the conclusiveness of Krishna consciousness. So that's the point. If we present ourselves as we are, that will be the best preaching. Now if you say, oh, but that's rough, that means that that's the way that devotee is. So it's not what you're speaking, it's that the devotee is rough. So what are we doing about refining that devotee? Right? So it's not that, you know, go to a karmi finishing school. Right? It's about understanding the Vaishnava etiquette from the Vaishnava perspective. And then from that, it will all get... Because we think it's just how you behave and this and that. So techniques of that, then we'll look into books that just discuss that. But people who know culture, it means it's a whole lifestyle. How you keep your house is going to then be how you deal. Like, say, someone is supposed to... He's very organized in how he manages. But now that means you go to his house is organized. Everything's clean, it's nice, everything's in its proper place. You can say, yes, he's a very, you know, and his management is very uncluttered, very straightforward. You go to his house, it's like that. How he dresses is like that. What stuff he has in his pockets, what he has in his briefcase is like that. So that's why if you focus on the lifestyle, you'll get that in the occupation. But the modern foolishness is, no, we'll just look at the occupational and get the techniques there, and then we will try to take those and with a shoehorn or a crowbar or a large mallet, you know, circus mallet, then we'll try to get that to fit into ashram. And it will never fit. Because varna is simply economic-based. So the only reason we're doing it is economics. Varna, ashram, is not economic-based. It's spiritual-based. Therefore, the two, you can't... Ashram will go to varna, but varna won't go to ashram. Does that make sense? So that's the thing is that, therefore, those who know that. They can catch that. And others will say, oh, it's not important, means they don't know. Someone who understands culture will not misunderstand the culture. They'll say the devotee is being uncultured. They won't say it's preaching or it's Krishna consciousness or it's the Vedic culture. They won't say that because they'll know they're not doing that. They'll know it's just this devotee is uncultured. And so therefore, you refine the culture. How? By the chanting process and by training. Like that. But training in the lifestyle and practices of Vaishnavas. That is, you don't have a more refined culture than that. But you know, it's a standard thing that in India, as far as gentleman goes, the Bengali Babu is like the most refined. Like that. So then if you know Gaudiya culture, then why you wouldn't be able to function? Prabhupada's Bengali gentleman, aristocratic Bengali gentleman, there was no situation that he was ever in that he didn't know how to behave and get the result. And he would move from very, very sweet to, very, you know, from thunderbolt to rose. Very knowledgeable to just, you know, more just, you know, kind of on the sentiment. He would use the whole, because he's a gentleman. So that's the whole thing. The culture is the whole point. So we're thinking that I will get money by learning how to make money, but by dharma, you get artha. By studying artha, you won't get artha. Does that make sense? You have to know dharma. That will give you artha. And where is Dharma practiced? In ashram. And you're doing an occupation because of Dharma. And so therefore the rules of Dharma have to apply, and then from that, then you'll get your money. So this idea of doing it the other way around, by artha will get bhakti. It's like, where does that come from? Won't even give Dharma, let alone bhakti. You know. Does that make sense? Yes. Yes. To understand Krishna. In despite of their advancement in Vedic knowledge and rituals, they did not understand Krishna. Therefore, their knowledge of the Vedas is useless, because that's the purpose of the Vedas, just to know Krishna, right? As it is explained in the Veda, the purpose of the Vedas, as it is explained in the Gita, to understand Krishna. So they knew all this advanced knowledge, but they didn't know Krishna. So that's not what it's for.
It's avidya.
Huh?
It's avidya.
It's avidya, yeah. Therefore, their knowledge of the Vedas is useless. I mean, you can do a ritual and get to the heavenly planets, but it's useless for taking him back to Godhead. That's the whole point. Lord Chaitanya therefore gave his valuable opinion that although a person may not be born in a Brahmin family, if he knows Krishna or the science of Krishna consciousness, he is more than a Brahmin, and he is quite fit to become a spiritual master. So it's just based on that, that basically, you know, many of us have a standing at all in Krishna consciousness. Is on the mundane platform, then not so much. You know, it's emergency. So in emergency, then whatever has to be done. Since the Brahmins aren't taking up the Brahminical duty of preaching, since that is the purpose of the Vedas, they're just sticking to the ritualistic aspects if they happen to be more pious. Otherwise, they're all in IT, like that. Or nowadays, because that's getting full, then they get into management, business management, and other, you know, stuff. Whatever is the latest thing, then that's what they're doing. So, because they're doing that, therefore then the Mlechas and Yavanas have to take up the Brahminical activities in that. But if the Brahmins would be doing it, then the Mlechas and Yavanas can go back to their natural position of just following, because the Brahmins will be so much better at it. Right? But until such time happens, then, hey.
That's what you get.
Yes. There are various details to be observed in the performance of sacrifice. They are known as desha, place, kala, time, Pritag Dravya, the different detailed paraphernalia, mantra, hymns, tantra, scriptural evidences, Agni, fire, Ritvik, learned performers of sacrifice, Devata, the demigods, Yajamana, the performer of the sacrifices, Kratu, the sacrifice itself, and Dharma, the procedures. All these are for satisfying Krishna. So Dharma, the procedures, means it's according to the nature of how it works. Right, at this point you put ghee in the fire. Why? Does fire like ghee? Right? Yeah, so it would be adharmic to put water in the fire. Right? Or when you're purifying yourself in the beginning, right? You know, because ghee is pure, right? Comes from the cow, it's known as pure. Then do we sprinkle ourselves with ghee? No, your wife will kill you. Yeah, you know, come home with your clothes all covered with ghee. No, you sprinkle yourself with water. Does that make sense? That's how it works. So everything has a dharma, and according to that, then all these, the desha, the place, and the kala, time, right? Then they have all the paraphernalia that's there, but then they have the persons. Who are the persons? The Yajamana and the Ritvik. Right? So then, according to that, then according to what sacrifice you want to do and what you're qualified for, then you have a particular ritvik to do that. Right? Does that make sense? And so then that's time, place, and circumstances. Right? Yeah? Okay. All these are for satisfying Krishna. So the place is by what Krishna says is the proper place. The time is what Krishna says is the proper time. So you say, oh, we don't care about all this time, that's all for smartness. No, but the timings are for Krishna. But if it comes down to something that will be, you can do a very nice program and all that, and at another time, when it's the auspicious time at, you know, how you say, 4:03 in the morning and no one's going to be there, but there's also a nice time in the afternoon at 4 o'clock, then you pick the 4 o'clock one. no, but this is so good. There hasn't been a muhurta like that for the last 12 years. And yeah, you do it at 4 in the afternoon. Like that. You can do it at 4 in the morning alone and then do it in the afternoon for the public. Yeah. But. Okay, the different detailed paraphernalia. So what's there? That's what Krishna likes. He likes all those paraphernalias there. Mantra, right? So the specific what mantras, they have their meaning, they have their facilities. The tantra, the scriptural evidences, so what are the particular techniques and all that. The fire, then, that's Krishna, so that medium he likes. The learned performers of sacrifice, the demigods, the yajaman, the kratu, the sacrifice itself, how it'll go, how it's constructed. And then the dharma, what's the nature of everything and how you deal with it. Does that make sense? So all that's to please Krishna. So Krishna's given all that. But that's all the medium for pleasing him through devotion. So if you are a yajnik brahmin that can do all that to please Krishna, Krishna's happy with that. But if we get distracted by all that and forget that it's for Krishna, then Krishna's not satisfied, since it's for Krishna. So the cowherd boys doing simple cowherd stuff are pleasing Krishna because they're doing it for Krishna. While the brahmins are doing all more elevated, technically more stuff, but they're not pleasing Krishna because they're not connecting it to Krishna. Hmm? It is confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita that he is the actual enjoyer of all sacrifices because he is directly the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the Supreme Absolute Truth beyond the conception or speculation of the material senses. He is present just like an ordinary human boy. But for persons who identify themselves with the body, it is very difficult to understand him. The brahmanas were very much interested in the comforts of the material body and in elevation to the higher planetary residences called Swargavas. They were therefore completely unable to understand the position of Krishna. Hmm? Yes?
You know, like the wives who are the devotees of these brahmanas, don't they give any good advice, you know, to their husbands regarding...
They may give good advice, but advice then is limited by how well someone will follow it. So if they're not going to follow it, then you don't also waste advice. Right? So they just do their duties. The point is if they only do their duties that they're supposed to do, interact nicely, do all whatever they're doing, then from that platform, they perform their duties. They're not irreligious. They're religious. And their devotees, they do all that to please Krishna. And so they have perfected their duties and they will go back to Godhead. And then the husbands, they're not taking advantage of the facility they have. They have the Vedic knowledge. They're not listening to that. Why would they listen to their wives? Right? So, you know, when it comes to knowledge, when it comes to, okay, you know, how you say, your fingers are drying, and so if your fingers dry, Lakshmi goes away, so you should go wash your hands. Don't listen to that one. Yeah? Yes.
I was wondering that here in this incident where if the husband is a devotee and then the wife gets so much benefit, I don't know
yes.
how many percent, but here like
50.
50%. And this with them.
Not even 51-49, it's 50%.
50%.
Yeah, but notice in this it does not go the other way.
So
how is that equal? Somebody brought that up the other day. It's actually for the, you know, the liberationists. Then one of the things would be is, so are those women, are they going to be comfortable that 50% of their benefits on the pious and devotional platform then go to the husband?
Wouldn't it be for them also a benefit if it did, because then their husband would become more devotional?
But if they cared about the husband, would they be a woman's liberationist in the first place?
Probably not.
Yes, so that's the whole point. So what we're saying is that they are independent in this and that, but then they want half of what their independence to go to someone else?
No.
So then if you want to make it equal, then that's how it has to work. Half of their karma, half of the bad karma of the husband goes to the wife. Are they going to go for that one? No, but if you say half of the wife's bad karma goes to the husband, she keeps 100% of her good stuff, and half of her bad stuff goes to the husband. The husband keeps 100% of his bad stuff, and half of his good stuff goes to the wife. Do the women want to reverse that? No. Huh?
It's
very equal.
Yeah, that's as equal as you get, right? You know, so when they're talking about equal, it's like they don't. It's just like the Vedas go so far beyond equal. It's not even funny, right? So yeah. So is it equal to take half of what the men have and then get half of that? So you get 75%, 25%? You know, and that's what's called equal? And we're being generous here. It's actually 90%, 10%. Is that and facilities.
Someone was saying about this discussion about these women that if something doesn't go your way, are you going to blame yourself? No.
Yeah. So this whole thing is the Vedas already make it in favor of women. But it's still the context of where it's in favor of women. And there's areas where it's not. It's in favor of the men. Because it's their area. You know, it's just like out in the fields of Vrindavan, it's in favor of the cowherd boys, not Mother Jashoda. She sends lunches and stuff like that, but it's in favor of the cowherd boys. And when it's at Mother Jashoda's house, it's in favor of Mother Jashoda, not the cowherd boys. Right? You know, in her house, her rules. And when they're out in the field, their rules. So like that, the Vedic knows where everyone's nature is, and that's the whole balance. And if you follow it, everybody's perfectly happy. It may not make sense, but it actually does, because it's the way Krishna arranged it. So those who have love for Krishna and those rasas, that's how it manifests. Does that make sense?
Is that also right, the inhabitants of Vrindavan would not like just go to Mathura because like they had their area?
It's a different flavor, yes, because then it's not the area of sweetness, it's the area of opulence.
Yeah.
So then they will be more shy there. And the kings will be, you know, when the kings come to Vrindavan, then, you know, where's the opulence? You know, so they don't see it. Yeah, that's why everybody has their own realm. Does that make sense? Okay.
It is confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita.
Okay. It is confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita that he is the actual enjoyer of all sacrifices because he is directly the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the Supreme Absolute Truth, beyond the conception or speculation of the material senses. He is present just like an ordinary human boy, but for persons who identify themselves with the body, it is very difficult to understand him. The Brahmanas were very much interested in the comforts of the material body and in elevation to the higher planetary residences called Swargavas. They were therefore completely unable to understand the position of Krishna.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Prabhupada ki.